Hello, welcome to the midweek edition of the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Seb Parkinson. I'm your host today. And in this midweek special, we're going to talk through Manchester United's financial results month ending December the 31st, 2023. I'm joined by Dave Powell, the Chief Business of Football writer for Reach PLC. We're going to go through anything and everything about these results, what they mean for FFP, PSR, what it means for transfers, what it means for the future of Manchester United, what it means for the Glazers, for Jim Ratcliffe, just everything to do with this, anything that we can find out. And Dave, who is, he doesn't like to be called an expert, but in my opinion, he's an expert in the field. Chief Business of Football Writer for Reach PLC. Dave, welcome, and just give us a bit of an introduction about what you do and who you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's it kind of shows a sign of the times where we are with football, that there is even a Business of Football writer working for the organisation. Business of Sport, Business of Football is huge now. People are more interested in where the money comes from than they ever have been, because everything that comes into the club eventually trickles down in terms of how much have we got to spend on wages and transfers, and ultimately that's the be all and end all of it. Yeah, so I've been in this expanded role for about 3.5 months now, having worked at the Echo in a similar role in Liverpool for the last 3.5 years. So yeah, it's wide, brief, many clubs, but interesting nonetheless.
And something that a lot of fans ask, and I say a lot of this on social media, is why do certain clubs post their financial results? Like, what's the reason for it?
It's not all clubs. I mean, there's a very select group of clubs in world football that are publicly listed on the stock exchange. Therefore, you know, the public can buy shares in them, and Manchester United are one of those. They're listed on the New York Stock Exchange. Traditionally, over here, we have Companies House when we file results for businesses, which is a 12-month period. So there's a flurry of accounts coming out for football clubs at the moment because it is account season, end of the financial year. For many is May and June, so you're looking back 12 months. Now, being on the being publicly listed on the stock exchange, you are duty-bound to your investors and your shareholders to provide them with accurate and more up-to-date reporting so as they can know how their investment stands. And that's basically it. So United do, you know, they have 4 quarterly reports. So, well, 3 quarterly reports and a full year report. So, that's the long and the short, really. It's because it's very much to for investors to be able to see how their asset or their investment is performing over a period of time, but in more granular detail in the shorter time frame, rather than having to wait every 12 months for an update, which is actually 12 months out of date from the previous financial year anyway.
And United sit on a debt at the moment of £773.3 million at the time of recording, a debt which only ever seems to be growing. Like, how can this be sustainable? And why are the Glazer family allowed to do this? Why is it allowed to happen?
Because they can service it, really. I mean, it's if you can service debt, you can have debt. Tottenham Hotspur's debt is bigger than United, I think. That's getting close to 800 and odd, close to a billion maybe. But that is attributed to the building of the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which was completed in 2019. So that is, there's good debt and bad debt. Good debt will largely be seen as what Spurs did, because I think they got a 30-year mortgage on that debt on the stadium. So by the time they clear through that, it's kind of everything is just, you know, pure profit over and above that. Arsenal did the same. They dug themselves into a little bit of a hole in the late 2000s, early 2000s, at the expense of signing players because they had a lot of debt because they built the Emirates Stadium. That's now been cleared ahead of time. So their fortunes will change in the future. In United's case, obviously, the Glazers purchased the club through debt. So it was a leveraged buyout. So difference being that there was never kind of a penny of their own money which went into it. It was debt financed, and that obviously rankles with supporters, understandably. But United are always able to service their debt; they don't miss debt payments. But and that debt figure kind of fluctuates. I think it dropped 50 odd million in the current reporting period due to interest rate changes, etc. But it still remains this kind of ugly millstone around the club's neck, which fans would rather didn't exist. But in terms of them being able to to purchase players, it's not impactful because it's not in the profit and loss every single year. That, I mean, when we talk about PSR, I know we'll probably discuss that later, that's looked at over kind of a three-year period, and that doesn't really come into it. So, it's a ugly thing, I think, around the neck of United, which fans would rather they didn't have, but ultimately it's not impactful for them signing players until such time that they are unable to meet the kind of the repayments and the interest repayments, of which there is no sign or suggestion that they'll ever be able to do that, because United are in the position to be able to, as one of the biggest clubs in the world, to be able to kind of secure against kind of future media revenues and things like that. So so there's no concern in that respect. It's just a kind of an unpalatable thing to have.
So on the next quarter results, United obviously aren't in the Champions League anymore. They got knocked out in the group stages. So there's not even like a last 16 revenue or anything in there. So what can we expect the next quarter results to look like? And how much of Jim Ratcliffe's investment will that show? Because that might skew the results perhaps.
We've already had 156 million, I think, shown in these filings from the first tranche of investment of kind of capital, which has come from Ratcliffe's investment. I think there's another 78, 80 million to follow. In the next one. Yeah, I mean, it's impactful, not being in the Champions League. It's, not only is it the prize money which is accrued through the rounds, it's also the fact that you are adding additional games to your schedule, which is valuable. So match day revenue tends to fluctuate greatly when clubs do well in competitions. So even whether it's the Carabao Cup, the FA Cup, or the Champions League. I mean, the more home games you get in a competition, the more chance there is to earn money. Because, you know, if you are United, if you are Liverpool, you are selling out the stadium for a home game. It doesn't really make any difference what competition it is. So the value in that is still there. So, that'll be where the fluctuation happens. I mean, missing out on additional prize money, etc. But that's the curious thing about when kind of clubs base their kind of revenue model off doing well in competition, because it isn't always the case. I mean, you can miss out on the Champions League one year, you can miss out on European football altogether. I mean, Chelsea are going to have to carry the can for that further on down the road from the fact that their business model when the club was purchased by Todd Boehly and Clear Lake Capital was to be a regular fixture in European football. Now they seem quite far away from that. So, I mean, those will be the main kind of triggers, but we should see the second tranche of that Jim Ratcliffe investment happen. But when you're looking at quarterly statements, you're seeing small shifts. It's not like when we see the full year and we see these huge swings. I mean, it's kind of nip and tuck here and there.
Jim Ratcliffe's called upon the government to fund a Wembley of the North. To the man on the street, and you know, the public have basically been asked to pay for it, pay for some of it. So for what percentage of this stadium rebuild could the public purse be expected to pay? How much taxpayers' money would the government be looking to invest, if you can even put a figure on it?
Hard to say a percentage of it, really. I mean, it's been a case previously made. So if you go back to the mid-1990s, Manchester City tried to get government funding to build a stadium, which they wanted to become the Wembley North, when they were thinking about going for the Atlanta Gate, what was the Atlanta Olympic Games in 1996. Manchester tried to bid for that. So they wanted to secure some government funding for that. Now, as we look towards, you know, we've got kind of the Levelling Up initiative through government and things like that. So this notion of building kind of another national stadium has been kicking around for quite a while. Now, Newcastle want to do the same thing. So in the kind of the days and weeks after Jim Ratcliffe and United announced that they wanted to pursue this type of course of action, Newcastle are also considering a similar thing. And they'll be thinking, why not the very north of England? Why does it have to be Manchester? Why is it, and then Birmingham are probably thinking, Aston Villa are probably thinking, why have we not pursued this earlier, given the fact that we have this tag as a second city? But Manchester's always had appeal because of location, population, transport links, all that. So it's appealing. But United have to make a compelling case for it as to why this is actually needed. You know, there's a huge regeneration project which is going to be undergoing in the area, which is going to take several years, but ultimately we'll kind of raise the economic benefit around the area of that. It's about making a compelling case. And it's hard to put a figure on what percentage they'd look for, but they'd look to get a decent chunk of it bit paid down if it was going to mean they England play a set number of games there. But is there the appetite from that from kind of central government, given the fact that Wembley has its headquarters the FA has its headquarters at Wembley? Getting all these things to align. I mean, Jim Ratcliffe's vision is one thing and what he'd like to see, but as kind of these things happen, there is usually an entrenched belief of how things should be done centrally from London, and it's how you try and break that. Now, if the government or whichever government will be, and we'll know that later back into the year, are serious about kind of levelling up and creating greater economic opportunity in the north of England, then maybe that could, investment in something like this could be a flagship. But then other clubs would be thinking, why, is this not just to the benefit of Manchester United? And I suppose it poses more questions than it answers. I mean, it answers one great question for United: how do we fund this great new stadium, which will make us lots and lots of money? But the kind of the range of questions which would encounter from not only the taxpayer, but other football clubs in the Premier League, other local authorities that would probably want to see a national, if there's going to be another national stadium, why can't it be a general one, as opposed to why does it have to be someone's home? Why can't it be why isn't it in Birmingham, etc.? So there's all these questions which would be arise, but it's impossible to put a figure on what would be put to it in terms of taxpayer money, but it would require a lot of selling in order to get it done anyway.
Yeah, and United Stadium looks set to cost around £2 billion at the time of recording again, because we know that this figure fluctuates. We've seen what happened with HS2, where the figure just kept going up and up and up. How would the club fund such a proposal, given the debt? The £773 million worth of debt just doesn't seem to be being shifted anywhere. How would that happen?
It all depends on your access to capital, really. So you've got Jim Ratcliffe, who's one of the richest men in Britain, but also one of the richest men in the world. While we talked before about debt and things like that, these are heavy hitting family offices and businessmen with huge organizations that have access to capital and good credit ratings. So that's how it works. You go and try and find funding for these things. It's who has the appetite for it and where do they see the returns coming from. So it's kind of a different situation going on in Italy at the moment. So just to use it as a contrast, the AC Milan are looking to build a new stadium because AC Milan and Inter Milan are going their separate ways from the San Siro, and they're both pursuing separate projects for different reasons. Now, AC Milan's vision is to have a national stadium like Italy hasn't had. So they want to get a lot of that funded from part funded from government if they can, but they also are going to require capital commitment from other lenders. So raising the debt won't be an issue for someone like United. It'll be they're a strong business model, a football club brand which endures. They are kind of an uncorrelated asset, which means that so geopolitical things which happen, so whether it's COVID or rising interest rates, etc., these are assets which kind of remain stable-ish along that course. So if there's, you only have to look at the impact of the pandemic to see clubs in the main. I know they incurred losses, but they managed to ride it out, because if people have got money, they'll carry the one thing they'll be loath to stop spending on is, in many cases, the one thing they enjoy, which is the football. So these are kind of, they've got such a sticky kind of fan base in football that it just won't fall off a cliff. It just won't, and that's attractive to people who invest in football, because they know that it will still be here and it'll still be a strong asset in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time. So there won't be too much issue with raising debt around that.
And it's common knowledge that the Glazers use the club's money, not their own money, the club's money, to fund the strategic review with the employment of Rain to the tune of £9.6 million. Why did that come from the club's bank account? Why have they not paid for that themselves?
No, it's important for me to state here that I've no skin in the game here. I'm a Chester fan. So, the ownership of the Glazers has been kind of a bit of a black mark on English football, given the way it happened through kind of that leverage buyout, and it has been a case of how not to own a football club. Really, no Premier League titles in more than a decade. They've allowed the biggest testament to the fact of what they've done to United is the fact that Old Trafford, we're still talking about a redeveloped Old Trafford now, almost 20 years after they arrived. You look around their rivals, FSG have probably finished that Liverpool revamp as much as they're going to. They looked at new stadium first thing they did when they bought the club. Spurs have a new stadium. Man City latched onto the back of the Commonwealth Games to redevelop the Etihad. Arsenal have a new stadium, which was built in the past 15 years. United still has Old Trafford, which, you know, the famous leaky roof and things. It's kind of been a testament to the Glazer ownership. Now, if an ownership group is willing to not put any of their own money in to buy the football club, then they sure as hell aren't going to put their own money in to facilitate a business transaction which involves the football club. So they've no qualms about taking money from the club. They take dividends from the club. The club still spends, is their argument. They still spend in the transfer market. That would be the get out, saying, well, we still spend on wages. We have the highest wage bill. It's going to be the highest wage bill next season, I think, the Premier League, when the Champions League money kicks back in. And that's all very, very good and well, but they've taken hundreds of millions out of the football club. Now, they're not going to have any qualms about sticking one in the eye of fans again and making the club pay for this kind of Rain transaction. That's just a cost of business for them. And this is a business. It's not an emotional connection they have with the football club. It is purely a business transaction, and this is their business. So they have no problems with parting with that cash. As bleak as that sounds, that is the be-all and end-all, really. That's it.
And finally, to finish, I just want to run through the PSR and FFP situation. How do you see this affecting United's transfer allocation? If a stadium rebuild was to go ahead, surely the cost of building a new ground would eat up most of the, if not all of the transfer allowance, or do they have some sort of special dispensation with FFP and PSR for infrastructure?
I take the point. The Arsenal one was a bit different. Arsenal's revenues weren't as high, weren't like United's are now. So when they were trying to balance being competitive with building a new stadium, they had to have good cash flow as well. And also they still spent money, but it still required them to think a bit more about how that money was allocated, where it was going, how they were spending it, because they had a huge commitment on a stadium build. Now, PSR, as it stands at the moment, so it's going to get changed, whether it's next year, year after, it's going to be done as in its current guise. So you have £105 million of allowable losses over a three-year period. Of that sum, many clubs go over that £105 million. Not all of them, many of them. Of that, you're allowed to deduct stuff, such things as infrastructure. So if you're Spurs have got the best PSR position of anyone in the Premier League, because that £800 million worth of debt attributed to the stadium is infrastructure. So deduct that straight away. Then you have investment in the women's game, community projects, and the academy. So things like that, you can deduct all that. Now, that's going to be replaced by something in line with UEFA's squad cost ratio rule, the idea is to try and curb spend on transfers. So they don't want to curb investment in football clubs into the actual club itself. So investment into the bricks and mortar, the academies, the women's game, community. It'd have to be some pretty bad rules to kind of curb spending on investing in all that. So whatever rules are implemented, You will still be allowed to invest heavily in all of those things and it not impacting your transfer spend. Now, UEFA's squad to asset ratios rule is it's transfer spend and wages and agents fees against revenue as a percentage. So transfer fees accounted for by the amortization costs, which is obviously when you sign a player, the guaranteed sum of that deal is divided over the length of a contract, which is now limited to 5 years. So there'll be no barriers in place to stop investment in bricks and mortar. So if United wanted to build a £2 billion stadium, as long as they had the cash flow to be able to fund transfers, which they would because they have huge revenue streams, it wouldn't be a problem, wouldn't be impactful. Spurs, again, slightly different case because revenue's much lower than United and the rest. They built the stadium to try and bridge that gap and get closer to United, City and Liverpool. So that's kind of the flip side of the coin there. But no, it won't be impactful to United's to spend into it to a great degree. But I do think that we will eventually, probably going down a different path here, but start moving to a point whereby we start to think differently about the transfer market because people who are coming in are largely now are trying to run businesses and create strong revenue streams, but all that kind of falls by the wayside, the Premier League, when you just kind of clubs put a gun to the head and just blow their brains out in the transfer market. That's just what happens. The transfer market is just crazy. And North American ownership in particular has a real problem trying to mesh what works in North America with what works in England and Europe because they have cost control there through salary caps and no promotion, relegation, etc. So, but yeah, I mean, United is to be able to spend, but I do think we're probably going to push towards clubs trying to reduce wage bill and transfer spend, which I think probably chimes with what Jim Ratcliffe, his vision for United is to spend less on transfers and wages, but yet raise success through smarter recruiting and better use of funds.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining me, Dave. Really appreciate your time. For anybody that wants to get in touch with Dave, just give him a lowdown of where to find you and your newsletter.
Yeah, so it's on X. It's under at underscore Dave Powell, and there's a weekly newsletter, the Bottom Line, which kind of focuses on the business of football, a bit more kind of in depth, a bit more granular detail about not so much telling you what has happened, but why it's happened, why it matters, and where we're going with football and sports business really, and trying to make a little bit of sense out of it all. But yeah, subscriptions are most welcome.
Excellent stuff. Right, well, like I say, if you want to follow Dave, go and join his Substack. Subscriptions are welcome, as he says. We'll be back on Friday with the usual suspects on the Manchester's Red podcast to preview Manchester United's FA Cup quarter final with Liverpool. See you then.